Blog Talk Radio.
Each day do you wake up and get out of bed? You got all these feelings rushing round in your head. You got that bout with doubt and neighbors singing the blues. Pick up the paper and it's all bad news. But you know in the end, happiness is your best friend. You can be what you wanna be. Hold down a step high and live like you're free. I said color, color your life happy. Color, every day you can choose. Color, color your life happy. If you choose happy, there's no way you can lose.
The difference between try and triumph is a little funky. We all have ups and downs, but you can still be happy. If you're gonna step, you might as well step high.
If you choose happy, there's no way you can lose.
ColorYourLifeHappy.com. Get your happy on.
Welcome to Color Your Life Happy for Monday, May 25th. I'm your host, Flora Brown, coming to you live from Anaheim, California, as I do every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Our show today will inform, inspire, and encourage you. Joining us in a moment for today's episode, Color Your Life Happy, Being Happy with Your Kids, will be Dr. Patricia Nan Anderson, educational psychologist and author of Parenting, a Field Guide. Hi, Patricia.
Hello, Flora. How are you today?
I'm great. I'm so happy to have you here. I want to welcome all of my listeners. I'm so honored that you made space in your schedule to join us today. I encourage all of you listening to participate. You can do that by asking questions or adding comments. If you're on the phone lines, all you have to do is press the number 1 to let me know you have a question or a comment. If you're on the web chat, just type in your questions or your comments, and I'll be able to see them and read them on the air. Let me remind you, too, that the show is live, so you know what that means. Anything can happen. Lost signals is one of the most common things that happens. And so if your call is suddenly lost, and that goes for my guest and me too, we just dial in again. The number to call again would be the same, 347-539-5700. And don't worry about missing anything because all the shows are recorded and available for you later under on-demand episodes on my show page. I'm Flora Brown again, and I'm an author, coach, inspirational speaker, and consultant. I'm also a mom of 4 and grandma of 3. Recently retired after 40 years of teaching junior high through university levels, the last 20 of which I taught critical thinking. If you haven't already done so, I want you to visit my website, ColorYourLifeHappy.com, where you can now invest in my book, Color Your Life Happy, for a special pre-release price before it is published in June. It is full of stories, tips, activities, all of which will speak to your inner desire to get the life you want and deserve. On the radio show, Color Your Life Happy, we talk about ways to create the lasting happiness you deserve in all areas of your life. Each week, I interview guests from various fields, such as self-help, spiritual journeys, relationships, change and adversity, parenting, wealth creation and career, all of these things which contribute to lasting happiness. Let's get to the amazing show we have for you today. Hi again, Patricia.
Hello again, Flora.
And welcome. Before I begin our interview, I want to tell our listeners a little bit about you, okay? And then we'll get started. Dr. Patricia Nan Anderson is an educational psychologist specializing in lifespan development, learning, and motivation. She coaches parents in private practice and consults with organizations that serve parents and families. She's the author of the new book, Parenting, a Field Guide, and that's available at her website at patricianananderson.com, and Nan is spelled N-A-N. So go over and take a look and purchase that book, whether you are a parent, a grandparent, or a friend of a parent. You can certainly make a great gift of that book. So, Patricia, I'm certainly a parent and grandparent, not great-grandparent yet, but I'm so eager to find out what things I did wrong and right along the way.
Oh, you know, and aren't we all? In fact, in my book, one of the last chapters is, you know, what to do when you've made a mistake. You know, after you've read all this through and think, oh, gosh, I should have. I should have done this. Right. There's always a new day, every day.
Every day.
You know, where we're allowed to make mistakes, and then we're allowed to do something different the next day. So
that's right. So let's get started with one of the top questions that I would suspect most parents have, and that is, how are you supposed to be happy when you have children who disappoint, worry, or defy us? Because normal children do that.
They do. And that's exactly the key piece. You put your finger right on it. Normal children do disappoint, worry, and defy us. And that's normal. You know, it's not unusual. You shouldn't feel like you're being picked on or that. You know, sometimes parents seem to think I would be a better parent if I had a better kid. Well, no. All kids have potential, and this is part of the deal. If it were that easy, no one would, we'd be like puppies or something and fully grown almost immediately. So it doesn't work that way. How are you supposed to be happy with kids who disappoint or worry or defy you? Well, you know, as you know very well, color your life happy, happiness is a choice. And it's up to each of us to see the joy in every day. And even when our kids are driving us crazy, they are still our kids. When I work with parents, I invite them to see their raising their children as a long-term project. So rather than seeing this as how am I going to solve this issue, whatever it is, right now that's in front of me today, kind of a quick fix thing, to look on raising children as something that really will never stop. You will continue raising your children up. You know, you have grown children. You still are their parent. They still are your children. You still have some influence, you know. You still are concerned about them. They keep you up at night once in a while. This is what it means to be a parent. And so to not say, I would like it if everything were smooth and lovely, I mean, that would be boring. It really would. And it would mean that there's no growth happening.
Okay.
You're not growing as an individual. Your children aren't growing as human beings. So when there is discord and disconnect and some unhappiness, that's actually a sign that something's happening, that there's progress going on. It's an opportunity rather than a setback.
Okay.
So again, I invite parents to take the long view and not look at things as look for that immediate fix. This is a long-term project.
I was thinking when you were saying about it being normal and it's a long-term project, that part of, I've always felt like part of what's happening when children are defying us is going through growth stages that are very important for them to start identifying their own personality, separating themselves from, distinguishing themselves from us.
Distinguishing themselves. I like that better. Yes, that's a great word. Yes.
And getting their own set of choices and values that we hope are going to eventually be in concert with ours, but they have to defy us in order to...
That would make us most comfortable, right.
Yeah, it would make us most comfortable.
When you stop and think, you know, I mean, we all love our children. I love mine. I love my grandchildren, you know, but while you're raising those kids, think ahead. What is your ultimate goal? Your ultimate goal is that your child is going to grow up, find useful work to do in the world, find some sort of significant relationship, move out of your house, and establish a fine life of his or her own, and come back and visit you once in a while.
That is
our goal, and children can't do that unless we give them opportunities to grow, to distinguish themselves from us, to make their own decisions. And some of those decisions we're going to disagree with. Some of those decisions are going to be mistakes, and your kids are going to learn from their mistakes. This is the normal process of getting to that goal of being a fully functioning adult.
Mm.
If our kids, if all they did was say, yes, Mom, yes, Dad, I'll do whatever you want, they would never be fully functioning adults.
No.
And so you're right. Defiance is actually in 2-year-olds, 4-year-olds, 14-year-olds, 24-year-olds, a step in the right direction, as long as it's civil, you know, and not, you know, violent. I mean, you want to encourage reasonable ways of communicating your needs and disagreements, and you know, you do that through modeling. A lot of parenting
is there some
modeling
special trick to this for parents to know about?
Well, you know, the special trick is in realizing that your children are right now the adults they are going to be, and that's a twist. I want you to think back to when you were, just pick an age, you know. Think back to when you were 14. Think back to when you were 12.
Yes.
Remember something from when you were 6. When you were a much younger person, weren't you really the same person you are now? Do you
shorter.
Feel like you were, I mean, I'm not talking about you were shorter. I'm not talking about, intellectually, you know, certainly you know a lot more. You've had a lot more experience.
Yes.
But
yeah.
Down in yourself, you know, the hurts and the, when you think back of times you were treated badly or you were very happy, that person is the same person you are now.
Yes. Okay.
And that means that your child is the same person she's going to become.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that child deserves the same kind of consideration and respect and that she will get from you when she's an adult. You see what I'm saying?
Yes,
that
yes.
Children are as worthy of our consideration as our adult friends.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that we often take as news.
Yes. Well, not
that,
only we take as news, I think because many of us weren't raised that way, it's something that we have to really decide or convince ourselves is right, because one of my conflicts in raising my children was having to counter what my mom thought was right and having to kind of be in between her and my children with her telling me how I should be raising them and me thinking that I knew a better way to raise them.
Right. It is that grandparent role, and I'm in it, and your mother was in it, and you're in it, is a difficult role because we do tend to, you know, we'd like to continue to help our children know exactly what we want them to do. But, you know, the human species has been around for whatever it's been around, 200 million years or something, and every parent for those whole 200 million years was a first-time parent.
Yep.
And every parent learned how to parent from their childhood experiences.
Mm.
We learn to be a parent by being a child of our parents and seeing, you know, what our parents did and having that effect. And so it's really difficult to counter those voices in our heads and do things and think differently than our parents. And it's not necessarily to counter, but again, it is to be your own person and to say, what do I want? What is my ultimate goal? What can I do to develop the potential of this little human being?
Hmm.
Not how can I do what my mother did, but how, you know, maybe that's what the answer is, but maybe it's not.
Hmm.
But we need to look at where we want to go, how we can support our children and support society by creating the very best human beings we can, and how is that done?
Yeah,
and it does require us to examine.
What I meant by counter my mother wasn't necessarily going against her, but what I meant was there. She and I would actually have arguments and disagreements because she was very much controlling, and she thought I should do what she said, even though I was.
But she was still trying to control, right?
She was trying to control. She had a difficult time giving up control.
Well, that was
a constant conflict with us.
Most of us as parents. I mean, I've been in this situation where it's like, just do as I say, you know? Just don't question me, just do it. Because wouldn't life be simpler? You know, I mean, all of life would be simpler if our employees or our boss or, you know, people at the grocery store, you know, if everyone we ran into just rolled over and did whatever we wanted them to do. You know, how much simpler it would be if we were in control.
Sometimes.
But there wouldn't
be. Sometimes
I'm
glad when they don't.
Absolutely. life would not be nearly so interesting. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't get the richness and the creativity and the contributions of all of those people because they would just be clones of ourselves.
Exactly.
We don't want our children to be clones of ourselves. We want them to be their own unique individual people.
What was interesting when you were saying, think of our children as the adults they're going to be,
yeah.
I think about the fact that many parents who impose this, I know more than you and I'm in charge and this whole control thing, while they're raising their children, and in some cases create quite a bit of negative feelings.
Right.
Then these children get grown, and suddenly these adults wonder why these their adult children don't want to come and visit them, don't want to be around them.
Right.
And I often think about, you know, how did they raise them, and is that a factor in why they don't want to be friends? They can't feel like friends.
It's dangerous, you know, if you are someone, I mean, think from your own personal perspective, you know, if I'm in some sort of relationship with somebody, it might be an employee-employer relationship, any kind of relationship, and that person actually seems to not have my best interest at heart,
mm-hmm.
that's a dangerous person to be around.
That's right.
You know, I can't trust that person to support me, that person might actually be undermining me in some way.
Exactly.
And I don't want to spend time with that person because I feel it's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And if children feel that their parents really have the parents' best interests at heart, and the parents are not interested in the children's development but are only interested in duplicating themselves through their kids, that's dangerous for that kid to really spend a lot of time. And so So there is that approach avoidance thing. Your parents are always your parents. But if it's difficult, dangerous, uncomfortable to go home for Thanksgiving, you're going to find some excuse not to. You know, you're just going
exactly.
to.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's my mother and I used to have that conversation when she was living in a senior building. And she would comment about how many of the residents never had visitors. They're, they have adult children, but their
children have family, but no one
will visit them. And she used to, comment that, isn't that awful that those children don't come to see their mother? And I said, Mom, you don't know what kind of relationship they had with their children when they were raising them. And in some cases, parents let other relatives raise their children, and they don't even develop bonding or relationship with them as children. So I said, you can't say that the children are at fault because they aren't visiting. You don't know what the background is.
Right. It's very much a two-way street. And
exactly.
We don't want to lay at the parents' doorstep the entire burden. Even when children are little, this is a reciprocal relationship. This is how it should be. I guide and make suggestions and make some rules even, and my kids might negotiate those back or teach me different ways to work. And, you know, this is an ongoing process.
Sure.
And certainly parents might very well get to the point where, having done everything that experts might suggest for them, their kids still grow up, move away, and disappear and leave them, you know, alone and friendless.
Mm-hmm.
And that could happen, you know, without and because of who the kids are, because of life experiences they've had or whatever. We're not in control of those kinds of things. And so, again, how to be happy with your kids is to be accommodating and to say, well, that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
I love my kids. They're not in a position where they can give back right now. So I'm going to make friends here among my neighbors. The door is open when my children want to come back, I'm going to welcome them back. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, I'm moving on. I'm not going to wallow in disappointment and bitterness. I'm going to color my life happy by accepting what my children can give me, mm-hmm. and not worrying about the things that I might want that they can't.
Yeah,
you know, our kids are the same as anyone else, and unfortunately, they're not, you know, we have to let them be who they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are we talking here about little kids or older ones, or is there a difference?
Wow, we kind of morphed into talking specifically about the older ones, didn't we? Because that's the situation you and I are in, Flora. But certainly,
right.
You know, when parents look at my book, Parenting a Field Guide, the first question is, what's the age group? Thinking that it is specifically for parents of very little kids. And I do talk to a lot of parents of infants. I spent many years as a professor of early childhood education. But parenting, the reason why my interest is in parent development is because parenting goes on forever. Once you have a child, you never quit being a parent. And the same concepts, the same thought patterns, the same perspective that will make you a successful parent of an infant or a toddler are the same thought patterns and perspectives that will make you a successful parent of a teenager or a young adult. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is a continuing thing. We're talking about the entire range.
Wow.
And I want to get back to the importance of being a role model.
Okay.
Because I think we often, again, through expedience or because this is how we were parented or whatever, we often adopt the idea, you know, do as I say, don't do as I do.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes.
And that doesn't work.
No.
You know, actions do speak louder than words.
Mm-hmm.
And in order for us to raise children who are truth tellers, for example,
mm-hmm.
we can't lie to them.
No.
You know, we can't say, well, yeah, I, you know, fudged on my taxes, and that's okay, but don't cheat on your math test.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to set the same standards for ourselves that we're setting for our kids, because kids see through it.
Right.
And once they realize there's a double standard and there's adult rules and there's kid rules, you know, the game's all up. You've basically lost credibility and the integrity is gone. So being a role model, what do you want? If you don't want your children to be hitters and get in trouble because they've been in a brawl in the playground, you can't hit your kids.
Hmm.
You know, and there are many, many parents who think that spanking or slapping their kids is justifiable,
mm-hmm.
and then when the kid goes and gets into a fight in the playground, they can't figure out why.
Right, right.
It's like, well, where did they learn that that's a way to solve problems? So we do have to be careful of that.
Well, you know, the whole thing about corporal punishment is so
yeah.
amazing, because when I was growing up, that was common. And
yes.
nobody at that time that I had heard of thought it was anything wrong with it, except those of us children who were getting
on the receiving end. Right.
The receiving end. And I don't recall, and maybe there were people that thought it was the wrong thing to do or the wrong way to parent, but I don't remember ever hearing about that. And it was so prevalent that not only was it okay for your parents,
uh-huh.
it was okay for any adult to spank you, your teachers.
Oh, yes.
And when I was a kid, if you got spanked by the teacher,
you were going to get spanked again.
You didn't run home and tell your parents about
no.
it, because
no.
then they'd spank you again, because
right.
the teacher had to spank you for
exactly.
some reason. So now they're spanking you for whatever you did, plus troubling the teacher, upsetting
right.
the teacher that way.
Exactly.
So you just kept that news to
well,
yourself.
And this raises an interesting question, and I'm really, really, really glad you brought it up, is, what's the difference between, you know, an era 20 or 30 years ago, 40 years ago, and the era today? And let's stop and look at the kinds of society children are growing up into.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, middle of the last century, children were growing up in a society that was pretty lockstep.
Mm-hmm.
There were very specifically defined roles for the sexes.
Mm-hmm.
there were very specifically defined roles for what an employee and an employer, that relationship. There were specifically defined roles about your work life. You know, we're looking at the fallout from that now with the big three automakers, the idea that at one point you started with a company and you worked for them for your entire work life. And you retired and got a pension and a gold watch, and that was how it was. It was a very passive kind of small-town way, you know. I mean, things were limited geographically. Many people never moved beyond their community. It was small in terms of who you knew and what your opportunities were.
Yeah.
And so, to a certain extent, the message from all of those social roles was, here's your place, you know what your place is, and stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's best enforced through corporal punishment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you move out of line, you know, the whole thing about being, you know, if you're the peg that sticks up too high, you're going to get hammered down.
Mm-hmm.
That exactly was the most efficient way to continue to perpetuate a society that moved according to pre-established rules, if you will. Really, you know, a Kohlbergian stage three morality, just a law and order morality. There's, you know, these are the rules and you have to follow them and you can't question them. That was pretty limiting. That was pretty limiting.
And it was limiting on purpose.
It was purposely limiting, and thank goodness we moved past that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, through the civil rights movement and the women's liberation movement and the gay pride movement and the special needs rights movement, you know, we've moved past the idea of saying this is how people have to be, and there's only one way, and if we have to beat it out of you, any kind of creativity, we will. Now society moves on creativity, on flexibility. The downside is there is little security in the world for jobs or relationships or whatever. But the good news is you can be whatever you want to be. And to have your creativity, your personal potential literally slapped out of you is not acceptable. It really wasn't acceptable in the 1950s, except it matched society's expectations.
Right,
it doesn't match society anymore. And if we're going to have a 21st century society, if we're going to raise children who are going to be successful in a 21st century society, we've got to have kids who can recognize their potential, maximize that potential, make their way in the world freely and with some without fear of being hit over the head.
Yeah. That's one thing I thought about when you were explaining the limiting times of the 40s, 30s, 40s,
yeah,
along there, was the fact that also, not to speak in support of corporal punishment, but there was some element of using it to keep you safe, because I can remember when when I was growing up, I grew up in the time of segregation.
Right.
And so we were cautioned about, you know, what to do and what, where not to go and what to say and
exactly.
so forth.
Yeah.
And you could really get into trouble with your parents if you didn't adhere to these, because sometimes, like in the case of Emmett Till, when he went to visit his folks in the South, he didn't understand the severity of glancing at or whistling at whatever he did. I think he just looked at a white girl and lost his life. So there were things that as African-American children we were spanked about, because our parents knew that those things could cost us our lives or cost, you know, us some kind of harm. That's not saying that corporal punishment was a good thing.
No, and to a certain extent, you know, I mean, you're walking down the sidewalk with your four-year-old today or your four-year-old grandchild today, and she darts out into the street. You're going to grab that kid, and you're probably going to shake her arm and say, don't do that.
That's,
you know,
right.
you're going to get a little physical. You're probably not going to swat her across the bottom, but you might.
Yes.
Because, again, it is a life and death issue, and you want to enforce that, you know, this is not a creativity exercise.
No.
You can't just decide to walk across the road. You've
no,
got to pay attention.
No.
There are some
That's
rules.
True.
Exactly.
True.
You know, right. So there's, but the idea that we do need to model what we want to see. We want to model the fullness of human potential rather than just cloning ourselves in our kids. We want our kids to be bigger and better than we are.
Now, do you have some specific steps that you recommend for parents?
Well, you know, treating your kid with respect and consideration. This is really, really often news to parents. The idea that, you know, one of the things that bugs me a lot is I'll see parents walking with their children, walking with their preschoolers, talking on their cell phone, as if the kids aren't there, which they would never do with another adult, with an adult friend. They would never have a conversation with a third adult friend while walking with them. They might have a, you know, a short, you know, yeah, I'll pick up this at Trader Joe's, and then, you know, I've got to go now. I'm talking to, you know, walking with Susie or something. But they would never carry on a 15-minute, half-an-hour conversation with someone else when there was an adult with them. But they will do that with their children. And it's you know, it's sending a message that you're not a real person. You're not important. So having respect and consideration, offering choices, trying to understand our kids' point of view, not necessarily caving into that point of view, but understanding how are they seeing this, and what are, you know, what are their issues. There was something recently. I had a graduate student who was doing a project, and she was, I can't remember now exactly, but she was asking questions of the kids about, you know, kind of a getting started with the lesson, you know, what do you know about, you know, plants or something. And, you know, the kinds of questions I would have asked would have been, you know, adulty kinds of questions. And the questions the kids asked were like, oh, you know, things like, you know, why is a leaf green, and are all leaves the same size? And it's like, okay, well, I guess those are good questions that I would not have thought to ask. And so not making the assumptions and not thinking from our own perspective, but taking the time to inquire, you know, what do you think about this? What do you think would be the best shirt to wear today? It's going to be, you know, 50 degrees. You know, do you think, you know, that, you know, which of these vegetables should we cook for supper? Which one would you most like to eat? Rather than, you know, just kind of imposing it by fiat.
Right, right.
You know, just trying to keep in mind that this is a real person, and our objective as a parent is to develop this child's capacity to make human and humane kinds of responses to the world. We want to support that. You know, that's our goal. And also see that this is a long-term process. There are going to be setbacks. You know, it's not all milk and honey. You're going to have to, you know, there are going to be times that are disappointing and are upsetting and embarrassing and worrisome. This is part of the deal. And to take this as the package and say, okay, you know, this is an opportunity to reteach a lesson, to again, investigate this, to look back at this, to evaluate our value system as a family, or where I've gone wrong in communicating that with my kid. You know, how can we reinforce this rather than, oh my gosh, I've got a bad kid.
You just made me think when you were talking about treating kids with respect and the situation of the telephone, talking on the phone and ignoring them. I remember when my kids were young and we are out in public, people would often ask me, what is her name? You know.
Oh, isn't that funny? As if they can't talk.
Right, and the 5 or 6 year old, and I had to say, well, she can talk. You can ask her. And there was a funny situation. This was a long time ago when they still had elevator operators on.
Oh, yes, okay.
Oh, back in department stores.
I remember, right.
And this this elevator operator asked my five, I guess she was five or so then.
Uh-huh.
Well, first she asked me, what's her name? And I said, well, she can actually talk, so you her. And she asked her, what's your name? And my daughter said, Tammy. And the lady just said, oh, that's nice. Then my daughter says to her, what is your name? And the lady answered. But she wasn't smart enough to figure out that my daughter was going to ask her every question that she asked.
Oh, of course. Yes.
So she went on and said, how old are you?
How old are you, right?
And my daughter said, I'm five. And then she says, how old are you?
Right. Exactly.
And the lady looked so shocked and upset, and of course, I'm sure she thought, what an awful
what a rude child, right, exactly.
Raising this rude child. But people don't, they ask kids questions and say things to kids that they would never say or ask of an adult. And then they think it's rude for that kid to come back with it. And I just thought that was the funniest scene. And I never forgot that because I encouraged my kids to talk. If people ask you questions, you talk.
Yep.
And consequently, they're pretty verbal these days.
Sure
even
in
restaurants, I wouldn't let them off the hook.
They should order.
They'd have to place their own order. And if they had a question about it, they'd say, well, how are these potatoes prepared? I said, I don't know. I don't work here.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to get the attention of the waitress. And, oh, my God, they hated doing that when they were at first, when they were young.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'd say, well, I guess you don't want to eat today.
They didn't
want to raise their hands and, you know, try to get
that
attention.
Right.
I said, you're going to have to learn to do it. You might as well learn now.
Yep.
And it was funny that, and, Lord, if something was wrong with the plate, then they've got to call the waitress back and get it changed or whatever. But
that was
important for them to learn to do.
Yes. Because it is important for the wait staff to have that experience as well.
Exactly.
I mean, but when we're raising capable children, we're also helping other people see all children.
Exactly.
And worthy of respect. So, we're spreading it around.
So that's important. What suppose let's go to the problem that a lot of parents have and fear, and that is dealing with teenagers. Suppose you have a teenager who's gotten into real trouble. What should a parent do next?
The first thing to keep in mind is that this is still your child, and the emphasis here is on the word child, that this is a person who made a mistake. This is someone who needs some support, you know. Imagine yourself in this position. You have been pulled over on the highway for doing something illegal. You know, you're out there by yourself, and there's nobody to help you out, no one to tell you what to say, no one to help you rummage through the glove box and find your registration card. It feels really lonely, and you really want some help, and your kids even more so because they're not experienced, and they need someone to talk to. They will never need you more than when they're in trouble, and it's not the time to turn your back on them. That will often be your first experience, your first impulse, is to say, oh, my gosh, I'm so embarrassed. How could you do that? How could you, you know, I raised you better. I can't talk to you about this. Or to, you know, basically say, well, you know, you're just going to have to, you know, I'm just washing my hands of this. You know, they're depending upon the seriousness of the offense, some parents really just lose it and threaten to wipe out, you know, 16 years of parenting and 50 years of relationship with this person. This is your child. This is the moment at which you have to step up. Not step back. And to say, you know, you're in a tough spot. You know, what were you thinking? For goodness sake, you know, what was going through your mind? But how can I help you weather this storm? How can I help you to fix it if it's fixable? How can I help you to accept whatever punishment is coming if that's what's happening? How can I help you to grow through this experience remember, you're also growing as a parent. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we don't like this kind of a growth experience.
No.
You know, we'd like to kind of run and avoid it. But this is what's what life has handed you and your child. You know, you got to step up and learn through this and grow through this and help your child grow through this.
I can see some people thinking, though, that it's irresponsible to support your kids when they're wrong, when they've done something wrong.
Yeah, and let's look closely at that word support. And I'm not suggesting that you become your child's partner in crime. You know,
okay.
I'm going to help you hide the stolen goods, or that you become an enabler. You know, that you deny. You know, you live in denial and you say, well, you know, little Susie could never have done such a thing. She's such a sweetie. I don't believe it. You know, I mean, there's a difference between empowering your child to step up and grow one step closer to being a responsible adult and enabling your child to remain a child, that mom or dad will fight the battles and I can remain a juvenile, you know. And so there's a difference. When I say support, I'm meaning support your child through this growth experience, that you're there to help with the lesson that's being learned here, and you will be there, you will be a confidant and a rock and someone to cling to through this difficult experience and on beyond. You'll still be there after it's over. You can see the future that's going to be better even though your child is stuck right now in this kind of awful present.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean that, oh, then mommy is going to take care of you or daddy's going to wipe this away. I'm going to hire the best attorney and we're going to get you off even though we knew, you know. You see what I'm saying? There's a difference between enabling and keeping your child little and empowering and helping your child to grow through this. And that's the kind of support that's going to be helpful.
Yeah, sometimes that hope that you have for them is all the hope they can see. And yet you do want them to understand the severity of whatever they've done, like you said.
Right, we don't want to support
being an enabler.
That's right. That's the key piece.
Yeah.
You know, and another important thing to remember as a parent, because our first reaction as a parent is often, it's embarrassment, it's anger, it's you feel betrayed. You know, here are my values, and what on earth is this coming from?
I felt inconvenienced.
Inconvenienced. Hey, I had my calendar all set. Now I gotta, bail you out or something. Whatever. Deal with the principal. Whatever I'm gonna do. Exactly. And so, you know, to see this as an opportunity. You know, it's a derailment, but this is another interesting life experience. And you should never you know give up, pass by a life experience. This is an opportunity to step up as a parent.
One of the listeners on the chat just typed in something, a comment, and she says, not accepting our children's problems affects our health adversely, and it becomes a vicious circle. So, in other words, not accepting your children, I suppose she means as they are, and supporting them.
I'm thinking, you know, from my perspective, that's what I'm thinking she means.
That's what I'm thinking.
I suppose it
affects your health adversely.
Right. We want, yes. I mean, if what the caller, the writer is meaning is suggesting that it's important for our own health that we learn to be accepting, to roll with the punches, to see opportunity, to choose happiness. I'm with her 100%. I think that's entirely true.
Yeah, she said
true.
Yes. That's what she
okay,
meant.
Good. Right.
Yeah.
We didn't want to put words in her mouth, but exactly. And it does. You know, again, you know, you can choose to be miserable and say, oh my gosh, this was an awful thing that happened, and I hate my child now, and I'm going to disown him, and you know that's it, or it's all up with us. Or you can say, this is a terrible year. You know, look at this. We've had this whole, you know, you got expelled, and we had to find a private school placement, and we had these legal fees, And, you know, and then we're going to have this to look back on later and say, whoa, that was a tough time we had.
Right, right.
That's your choice.
The listener just said, yes, that's what I mean. We can be strong no matter what.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I want to move to small things that children do, because most children do a lot of smaller things
rather than
big things. What about a child who breaks something, for example, and then lies about it?
Yeah, that's going to happen more often, right?
That's a
favorite, or swipe something or something. Yeah, it's like and you know, one of the key things to think about, especially with smaller kids, is the concept of intention.
Mm-hmm.
Did the child intend to break it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you come home, there's a vase broken, or you know, your favorite thingy is broken, whatever it is. How did this happen? And was it intentional? Was it an accident? You know, accidents do happen. And they happen with clumsy, rambunctious kids more often than they might happen with adults who can realize how fragile some things are.
Mm-hmm.
Intentionality matters. So let's assume first that it was an accident. I didn't mean to. I was being too bouncy in the house, and I crashed into this, and it broke. But I didn't set out to make it happen. So now the lesson is about being careful of your surroundings, looking around, maybe not running and jumping in the house, learning how to make a good apology, learning how to clean up the pieces, you know, those kinds of things. We have lessons to learn, but it's a different lesson than I took my baseball bat and I deliberately smashed this because I hate you. You know, that's a different thing. So if it was an accident, if it's not intentional, you've got some things to work on that are different lessons. If it was intentional, now you have to stop and say, all right, what is going on here? You know, and to sit down with a kid and ask that question, what was going through your mind? You know, why were you so angry that you did this? What was the purpose? What did you think was going to happen? You know, what's the outcome? And now how can you fix this? Because this was clearly an inappropriate thing to do. How can we, what are some things you can do in the future when you feel this way? How can we fix this immediate problem? How can we make restitution? How can we fix this? You know, but it's, you have to stop and look at, especially with little kids, was it intentional or accidental? And then work from there.
It makes me think about what you said earlier, though. If the child has observed you as a parent using violence and breaking things,
to
receive anger, that's going to be kind of a tough position.
That's what we do.
About breaking something in anger. That if that's a pattern that you have.
Exactly. If you're the parent with punch holes in the plaster wall, you know, then, and it's not that your child inherited that gene. It's that, you know, your kid has seen that this is what we do. And so it is, we do have to be careful that we are appropriate role models. And
so there's a pattern? There's a pattern there?
Well, there is a pattern. You know, kids do learn by observation. That's a scientific fact. And you know, if this is how we handle, you know, a deliberate breaking of something or even telling a lie, is an aggressive kind of act. And you know, it's how we handle our anger. It's how we get back, or how we make ourselves feel bigger and better and stronger. How we compensate for something. And so if we've observed other people handling their anger this way, or putting down others by breaking their stuff, you know, that's what we've learned. That's how you do it. That's what mom does. That's what dad does. So we do have to be careful. And talking about apology, which I mentioned there quickly, this is how kids learn to make apologies, is by watching us. We have to be quick to apologize, to say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to break your toy, whatever it is, you know. To demonstrate a good apology isn't ordering your child to say, I'm sorry, and have your kid say, I'm sorry. You know, this kind of begrudging. You want to model. We all make mistakes. It's going to happen, you know. It's going to happen. And so there's plenty of opportunity for us to model making your own apology, and there will be plenty of times for your child to practice making a good apology. And there's a trick to it.
Mm-hmm. I think that parents need to apologize to children, too, when they have done something wrong, or in the sense of haven't kept their word, or something that where they have made some kind of deal and they fell through with it with the child. I think parents certainly need to apologize.
Here's, and in doing that, we want to look at the big lesson. Again, looking at that long-term goal, we want to raise human beings who are capable and responsible and are a credit to society.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is acknowledging that we all are human. Even adults make mistakes, and even adults fix it when they make a mistake. If we paper it over, if we let our children believe that we are perfect and they should try to match our standard, because we never had to make an apology because, well, I did that for a reason, and it was, then our children are left thinking that they are somehow imperfect freaks because they know that they're making mistakes. And so we're sort of setting up an unrealistic standard for our kids when we don't acknowledge to them that, we make mistakes too, and here's what we do when we do it. We fix it, we apologize it, we take our punishment, whatever it is.
I'm laughing because when you were saying that, I thought about when I took my grandkids to see the Christmas lights in my area one year, and these houses compete for the decoration.
Right. Yes.
And it's in a cul-de-sac. So we were going round and round looking at these lights, and I was encouraging them. I said, oh, look at that, isn't that beautiful? And my youngest grandson said, Grandma, we've passed this house before. Are you lost?
Oh!
No, I'm not lost. I know where I'm going, and I kept going around and around.
Oh, I love it. Oh, I love it.
How to get out of this cul-de-sac. After about the third time of passing the same house, I said, Anthony, you're right. Grandma, I'm lost.
Yep.
So we have to admit, I didn't want to admit I was lost.
And also look at, in admitting that we are lost, we also validate our kids' ability to set us straight.
That's right.
You were not only saying, yes, I'm lost, but Anthony, you knew the right, you figured that out long before I did. How
That's
clever
right.
you are. This is empowering to him. That's right, exactly.
So I've had a number of those. Now, do you have some final thoughts? What should listeners take away from all this?
It sounds so squishy, but it is so true that the way to be, to try to develop your parenting skills, and it is development. That's why I talk about parent development. It's not parent training. It's not parent education. If it were that easy, we'd all just take a course and be done with it. It's development. It happens over a long period of time. We're going to make mistakes. There's going to be setbacks. We need to be nice to ourselves, nice to our kids, and carry forward. But parenting is about valuing your child unconditionally, to not have preset expectations. My kid's going to be, an NFL player or a Wall Street.
Well,
nobody wants their kid to be a Wall Street giant anymore, but, a captain of industry, whatever. We have to allow our children to grow and to support them along the way. And in that way, we'll be happy and our kids will be happy. We want to help them in a way that's not enabling, it's not suffocating, but is empowering.
How can someone who wants to get help from you get in touch with you? In addition to buying your book, of course.
You can certainly purchase my book. I invite you to go. The easiest way to get it is to go to patricianannanderson.com and click on the purchase the book page or something like that. The best way to get hold of me is through email. Email me at patricia@patricianannanderson.com. And, ask your questions, and I'll be happy to converse with you via email or by phone or whatever. Also, email and phone numbers are on the website.
And is there information there about private. It says you have private practice. So
yes,
if someone
I do
get help.
Right. I do coaching. I have a weekly teleconference that parents can subscribe to. I come and talk to parent groups and teacher groups and school groups and social service agencies as well. So, and I do that around the country. So if you, I live in Seattle, but if you're, you know, wherever you are, I'm likely to be coming to your town sometime soon. So there is a place on the web to request that.
Oh, okay. And I was thinking the people who have new children, grandchildren coming.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
would be ideal because I was talking to one lady about my book coming out and telling her that I had a chapter about balancing family and career, and she said, oh, I want to get that for my son who just had a baby.
Right.
And so I'm thinking the same thing.
I sell a lot of books to
grandparents. Not just for the parents, but for the grandparents to pass on to their children.
And also to read before they pass it on.
Yeah,
you know, I do sell a lot of parenting a field guide to grandparents. You say, oh, I need to give this to my daughter-in-law, son-in-law, son, daughter, because this book tells them things that I want to tell them and I don't think I can, you know, put in a way that's acceptable. A book makes a nice little emissary. But also, they're going to pick up hints if they stop and read the book before they pass it on about how to handle that grandparent grandchild thing, which is a tricky thing to negotiate.
It's a very tricky role, isn't it?
It is. It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
It's a lot easier.
Yeah. That's right.
But it has. I mean, there are things we need to know and to avoid because we can make some big mistakes.
Well, and part of that comes from you know the baggage that we and our kids together are carrying from our own child and parenting. It's a whole
true.
New day. That's right.
It's true. As we near the end of today's show, I want to urge all of you who have been enlightened, informed, encouraged, inspired by today's episode to share what you've learned with your family and your colleagues. Remember, the recording of the episode will be here on my radio site at blogtalkradio.com/Flora Brown, where you can return any time to hear it. You just go to on-demand episodes, and you can hear all of the episodes that have occurred. I want to thank my guest, Patricia Nan Anderson, and you, my listeners, for tuning in. Do you have any closing words, Patricia, before I sign off?
Everyone, just enjoy your children today, wherever they are, however old they are. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Flora.
Thank you. Listeners, please join me again next Monday, June 1st at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, when my guests Rose Winnick and Kate Meredith will discuss the founding and the benefits of an organization called Wives Behind the Badge, Incorporated. It's a nonprofit charitable organization. Their topic will be Color Your Life Happy, Handcuffed to a Lawman. Let me remind you to visit my website, coloryourlifehappy.com, and order your book at a special pre-release price before it rolls off the presses in June. I am your host, Flora Brown of Color Your Life Happy, the radio show designed to help you uncover the joy you deserve. I'm coming to you live from Anaheim, California, as I do every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Have a blessed week. Remember to color your life happy.
Color.
Color your life happy.